Cryptid Code. We're your hosts, Harmon
and Jessica,
and we like to talk about cryptids, aliens, and generally anything spooky.
And we cuss a little too much.
Indeed. Before we get into the episode, a few housekeeping things I wanted to get out of the way. Namely, we got a new mic. If you wondered why the last few episodes may have sounded a bit wonky, we started recording in a new space that our mic was not adapted to, so I finally bit the bullet and bought a new one. So let us know how the audio sounds, though I'm hoping it'll be a big boost. Season 2 keeps going strong, and for this next cryptid, we're journeying to the misty highlands of Scotland. Now, typically when one mentions Scotland in a conversation about cryptids, one's mind is instantly drawn to the infamous Loch Ness Monster. The world-famous lake monster hidden down in the waters of Loch Ness. But our quarry brings us not to the darkened depths, but instead high atop one of the tallest peaks in the land. The point in particular is one Bin Macadilly. I don't know how to say it without the accent, guys. If I try and say it without it, it feels like I'm doing it wrong. A massive mountain with a peak at over 4,000 feet. Being the tallest peak in the Carnegoan mountain range, as well as the second tallest mountain in the UK, Bin Macdhuibh makes for a popular destination for skiers, rock climbers, and most relevant today, hikers. Despite the rough, challenging terrain, hundreds come every year to dare the heights and slopes of the imposing peaks. Yet if you believe certain hushed whispers, frigid winds and difficult paths aren't the only danger posed to those braving the mountain. Now, do you know anything about Scotland? You ever been there? Any, like, particular thoughts you wish to share?
No, I've never been there. I know, I don't know anything other than about the Loch Ness Monster.
And Braveheart was there.
Yes, and Braveheart.
And our friend Brad from the Strange History Podcast has a kilt.
Yes, he does.
My parents went to Scotland once.
Really?
Yeah, they had haggis. My mom hated it. My dad loved it. He bought, like, canned haggis. And we had that for, like, a week after he got back.
Canned haggis sounds illegal.
It's disgusting, honestly.
I'm sure it is.
RIP, Scottish listeners. Please don't hate us. Our story begins with one Norman Colley. Now I should give context to exactly who this man is. He is one of history's most accomplished climbers. A fellow of the Royal Society, he had memberships in hiking clubs all over the world, including an invitation to join the Appalachian Club in 1897.
Wow.
He took 6 trips to the Canadian Rocky Mountains between 1897 and 1911. Over the course of those trips, he named over 30 peaks and made 21 first ascents, meaning he was the first documented person to reach the top of that mountain. He was personally mentored by one John Mackenzie, Britain's first professional mountain guide. Their exploits together were so iconic and impressive that the 1997 TV show, The Edge, was dedicated to trying to recreate their feats. The two were such good friends that they're actually buried next to each other, which I feel like has to be a slap in the face because I'm pretty sure both of them were married.
Oh, dear.
Imagine your own husband abandoning you to be buried next to his homie.
That'll be Donnie paying for the grave plot right next to Ryan Gosling.
Oh my god, they were roommates. And to really round it out, he's considered one of the possible real-life inspirations for Sherlock Holmes. However, the incident we're discussing today occurred in 1891. The following is his account of the encounter from the 1925 meeting of the Carnegoan Club. Quote, I was returning from the Carn on the summit in a mist when I began to think I heard something else than merely the noise of my own footsteps. Every few steps I took, I heard a crunch, and then another crunch, as if someone was walking after me, but taking steps 3 or 4 times the length of my own. I said to myself, this is all nonsense. I listened and heard it again, but could see nothing in the mist. As I walked on, the eerie crunch, crunch sounded behind me. I was seized with terror. and took to my heels, staggering blindly among the boulders for 4 or 5 miles, nearly down to... Oh, Jesus. This is why you look up a pronunciation guide. Rothmerkus Forest? What the fuck is that? Rothmerkus Forest.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Fucking Scotland, can you please get a real language?
Jesus.
Whatever you make of it, I do not know. But there is something very queer about the top of Ben MacDewey, and will not go back there again by myself, I know. End quote. This, my friends, is the first encounter of what has come to be known as the Grey Man of Ben MacDewey. At least, that's the English name. If you want it in Gaelic, its name is Amfir Leofmore. But since my pronunciation probably made every Scottish listener cringe, I'm just going to refer to this creature as the Grey Man. It'll be easier for both of us. I had mentioned that Colley first went public with his encounter decades after the fact in 1925 during a meeting of the Cairngorm Club. I think this will show the impact it had on him that he, an experienced, seasoned outdoorsman, was so unsettled by his sighting to remember it so far afterwards. Yet, Colley wasn't the only one. After he told his story, he would receive letters from other climbers who had seen similar things upon the mist-cloaked spire of Ben MacDewey, but were afraid to report what they saw. One of those reports came from Dr. A.M. Keyless, who was accompanying his brother as the pair were out shipping for crystals. First atop the summit, they spotted a towering black figure that was moving towards them. They could not make out his features, as the thing was obscured by thick fog. Thick fog. Thick fog. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. The figure moved closer, but disappeared from view in a dip along the pole. Terrified, the two quickly fled before they ever saw the creature emerge. Keyless later was told what he saw was simply an optical illusion of his own shadow reflected onto the mist. But he rejects that explanation as, by that logic, there should have been two figures, his shadow and his brother's, why in reality, there's only one. So, what do you think of this so far? A weird mountain man is just coming down to people, and it seems like mist is playing a big part into this.
It does. Like, it's almost like the fog monster from Lost.
Oh, I never seen Lost.
Oh, well, cool.
Can I be, like, a total... Okay, this might be something both of us know. Have you seen The Fog?
I have not.
By John Carpenter. Oh, God, dang it. The Mist? Okay. For those at home, she's nodding.
Okay, The Mist?
Yeah, The Mist.
The Mist?
Stephen King's The Mist?
I have not.
God, not seen it. Go to a movie, please.
Someone right now is listening to this and going, how the fuck has he never seen Lost, but she's never seen this? And they're like, why can't they understand each other? Also, it's the fact that, once again, we have people who are like, I saw the same thing. Mm-hmm. And just didn't report it. Because, you know, everyone sees something like this and they're like, oh, they're going to think I'm crazy. The other thing is, he was given an explanation and he refuted it, and that is fine. But also, you and I both know people come up with the craziest things, and we can be like, that's a plant in a window. That is a fake plant. And they're like, it's a face.
Yeah, she's referring to our job at a certain haunt location that I don't want to give away too much because I'm very paranoid about my online presence. Don't come after me, dark web. But yeah, people can believe what they can trick themselves into believing anything. The thing with that is, there's going to be a lot more witnesses before we get through this, and all of them seem to be at least somewhat experienced with climbing mountains, and it's hard to believe this would be his first time coming across the fog. I feel like some point right. In his tenure, you should have seen that.
Right.
Turning back the clock a bit, we can find an even earlier report matching these stories. In 1904, Hugh Walsh and his brother were camping at the top of Ben MacDewey. The pair were up there to do some naturalist work, taking specific interest in the spiders found on the mountain. I don't know, man. It bug scientists, entomologists, whatever they call them.
Entomologists?
Yeah, I can't do that. Bugs scare me.
So he bought me a bug for my birthday.
Yeah, and I had to get it shipped because I didn't want to look at it. Why do you think I kept it in the box?
Oh my god.
However, they know that whenever they move, they could hear footsteps following them. At first, they thought it was their own footsteps, but quickly realized the phantom noises were out of tempo with theirs. They also felt an intense sense of dread while they were atop the mountain. Another sighting would come from one Wendy Wood, who remarks her time on Ben MacDewey in her 1930 book, The Secret of the Spee. She was trekking up the steep slopes of the mountain and was going through Lorig Gru Pass when she heard a sudden booming voice all around her. She could not make out the words, but noted they sounded vaguely Gaelic. Thinking she was hearing the desperate pleas of a buried climber, she searched for the snow. But she was the only one there, or at least the only person. From behind her, she heard massive footsteps trailing her own. Something was there, and it was huge. Wendy was so terrified, she had a panic attack and ran all the way down the mountain to Whitewell. From her book, she wrote, quote, "After all the evidence that can be gathered, we are no nearer a reasonable solution of the identity of the huge being who is felt, seen, and heard by persons of such widely different proclivities in the same vicinity," end quote. An anonymous man would retell his story in the 1970 book, The Big Gray Man of Ben MacDewey. In 1940, he was camping at the peak of the mountain. The sun was just setting, casting a tall spire in a wave of thick darkness. Deciding his best to get some rest, he went to sleep in his tent. Yet, sometime later, he was woken up by the loud, heavy footsteps of something just outside his tent. Braver than I would be, he tried to look through the tent's nylon. He was shocked by what he saw, a massive creature standing over 20 feet tall. He described it as looking almost brown, resembling almost a Bigfoot-style creature. The thing, perhaps curious, stumbled around the camp, but eventually moved.
Okay, so not a monkey, because it's 20 feet tall.
I mean, I don't know what I would do in that situation, but I just looked out and saw fucking King Kong outside my tent.
Like he picked you up in his little hand. Big hand. He's like holding you like you're a Lego man.
Did you mean for that to rhyme?
No.
I was like a free form rap there for a second. Now, I think now is the best time to give a general description of this cryptid. The gray man is typically seen as 10 feet tall. Just ignore the 20 foot thing I just said. Broad shouldered with long arms, almost resembling a Bigfoot. Normally, this possible Sasquatch is described as having gray hair, hence gray man, and olive-colored skin. Even stranger, though, the gray man is seen as almost ethereal, kind of like a ghost or spirit in the form of a Bigfoot. Some witnesses have claimed that the creature can speak, but his language is nonsensical, yet sounds vaguely like Gaelic. The gray man is said to haunt predominantly the peak of Ben MacDewey, with a good chunk of sightings being the Lorig Gru Pass. Lorig Gru Pass is a 19-mile pass with an 835-meter elevation that runs along a number of mountains, including Ben MacDewey. So it's this big pass where it's kind of like a dip, at least if the photos are accurate, with high points on the other side. So it's almost like a canyon.
Okay. Interesting.
And it's known that wind typically kind of tunnels through there, kind of like a breezeway.
Okay.
That might be relevant for later. In 1942, one William Sidney Scroggie saw the same creature on Ben MacDewey. That same year, R. MacDonald Robertson. I fucking love these names.
Yeah,
really
something.
Bring back weird ass names. I don't know what happened in the 70s where all like everyone named Tim and John now. But there used to be some bangers. Reports hearing similar footsteps on the mountain. A story he would go on to share in a 1964 book titled More Highland Folktale. Alexander Taiwan. Taiwan? Taiwan. We're going Taiwan.
Oh.
was hunting for game with a revolver on the slopes of Ben MacDewey in October of 1943. As he neared the Luray Group Pass, he was suddenly enveloped by a quick onsetting fog. Even through the mist, he could make out the sky was turning dark, and soon it would be storming. He immediately decided to leave and started heading down the Corey Etchichin track. Yet, even as he made his hurried hike down, he could hear the thud of large footsteps behind him, with a worrying amount of time before each step.
Quote, worrying. So it has long legs.
It's big.
Okay.
It's big. Big boy.
Big boy.
Quote, in October 1943, I spent a 10-day leave climbing alone in the Cadogan Gorge. One afternoon, just as I reached the summit cairn of Ben MacDewey, mist swirled across the Luray Group and the mountain. The atmosphere became dark and oppressive. A fierce, bitter wind whisked among the boulders and an odd sound echoed through the mist. A loud footstep, it seemed. Then another, and another. A strange shape loomed up, receded, and came charging at me. Without hesitation, I whipped out the revolver and fired three times at the figure. When it so came on, I turned and hared down the path, reaching Glendary in a time that I would never have let. You may ask, was it really the fear of Laughmore? Frankly, I think it was. End quote. Spooky ending there, right?
Why is this a running theme? I love this with cryptids. I think it's the most ridiculous running theme that we have in any kind of lore that you talk about. But any cryptid you talk about, somebody's account, it's, we don't talk about this. You can't file a report on this. It didn't happen. Okay. Like, why are people so afraid of admitting that this stuff exists? Do we think everyone's... I mean, maybe for the time period, these people would have been considered crazy. We would have, like... chain them up in the basement at an asylum or something, but
on the flip side, I would also argue at that time when the world is way less explored, people would be way more open to the idea of like shit not being real. I mean, shit, weird shit just existing. Like,
right?
How many freak shows were just like, we have a free-tailed frog, and they're like, is that a real thing? I don't know. You got to pay to see it, and people are like, shit, I guess it is real.
Fuck yeah!
Fuck yeah!
I don't know. It's just one of those things where there's a lot of things that aren't explored, and you're right. So you would think people would be more open to the idea, but at the same time, a lot of people are superstitious. They're very, like, closed off, so they don't want to admit something like that might exist. Oh, God, all that audio is going to be useless.
I just wanted to make sure the audio is all right. No, I was just making sure. I was turning it up. But, yeah, it is a bit weird, because, like, it's just... kind of odd how quickly people shut things down.
Right.
Like, with no curiosity whatsoever. Like, for all he knows, it could have just been a dude on a mountain. Like, it's not...
Right.
Or, like, it could just be a crazy guy. Like, one of them heard fucking talking.
Yeah, like that lady who was, like, digging through the snow or whatever. Honestly, though, if I heard something talking to me while I was in the snowy-ass woods... I would not dig to look for whatever was talking. I wouldn't care if it was a climber. If I'm alone out there, I'm fucking leaving. I'm getting out.
I get that too. It's weird. It's just weird. And like, imagine like you're coming and you're like, hey, Harmon, I just saw a red squirrel. Did you see it too? And I just went, we don't talk about that shit. Keep it to yourself. You never saw it. Like... It's one of those things where, like, not answering is an answer.
Right.
So, saying you don't talk about it is pretty much the same as just talking about
it. Exactly.
However, not all sightings were strictly audio. A few unfortunate hill hikers would see the creature in the flesh, or the closest thing the gray man has. Sometime in the 1920s, a man named Tom Crowley was coming down the neighboring peak of Burrarack. Now, this man was no stranger to the mountains. It was, in fact, a former president of the Murray Mountaineering Club. As he carefully descended the slope, he turned back to see a horrifying sight. A tall, towering gray mass watched him from the mists, as its features obscured by the fog. Yet, he was able to make some things out. In his own words, he said the creature possessed, quote, pointed ears, long legs, and finger-like talons on its feet. in quotes, which I don't like. I don't like the idea of fingers on feet. That disturbs me.
No, I don't like that either.
Okay, I think I understand the stalkers and game wardens now, because if I saw somebody with fingers on his toes, I would be like, we don't talk about that.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think that also kind of sounds like vaguely ape, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Like how monkeys have like feet on their, like hands on their feet.
These people just met a howler monkey for the first time and they didn't know what it was.
I don't know what a howler monkey's doing in Scotland.
I don't know either.
Oh, that'd be terrifying. Imagine you're just in the middle of Scotland and get mauled by a gorilla.
Yeah.
An anonymous man would retell his story in the 1970 book, The Big Gray Man of Ben Macdu. In 1940, he was camping at the peak of the mountain. The sun was just setting, casting a tall spire in a wave of thick darkness. Deciding his best to get some rest, he went to sleep in his tent. Yet, sometime later, he was woken up by the loud, heavy footsteps of something just outside his tent. Braver than I would be, he tried to look through the tent's nylon. He was shocked by what he saw, a massive creature standing over 20 feet tall. He described it as looking almost brown, resembling almost a Bigfoot-style creature. The thing, perhaps curious, stumbled around the camp, but eventually moved.
Okay, so not a monkey, because it's 20 feet tall.
I mean, I don't know what I would do in that situation if I just looked out and saw fucking King Kong outside my tent.
He would pick you up in his little hand. Big giant hand. He's like holding you like you're a Lego man.
Did you mean for that to rhyme?
No.
That was like a free form rap there for a second. Now, I think now is the best time to give a general description of this cryptid. The gray man is typically seen as 10 feet tall. Just ignore the 20 foot thing I just said. Broad shouldered and with long arms, almost resembling a Bigfoot. Normally, this possible Sasquatch is described as having gray hair, hence gray man, and olive-colored skin. Even stranger, though, the gray man is seen as almost ethereal, kind of like a ghost or spirit in the form of a Bigfoot. Some witnesses have claimed that the creature can speak, but his language is nonsensical, yet sounds vaguely like Gaelic. The gray man is said to haunt predominantly the peak of Ben Macdui, with a good chunk of sightings being the Larig Grew Pass. Larig Grew Pass is a 19-mile pass with an 835-meter elevation that runs along a number of mountains, including Ben Macdui. So it's this big pass where it's kind of like a dip, at least if the photos are accurate, with high points on the other side. So it's almost like a canyon.
Okay. Interesting.
And it's noted that wind typically kind of tunnels through there, kind of like a breezeway.
Okay.
That might be relevant for later. In 1942, one William Sidney Scroggie saw the same creature on Ben Macdui. That same year, R. MacDonald Robertson. I fucking love these names.
Yeah,
they're really
something.
Bring back weird ass names. I don't know what happened in the 70s where all like everyone named Tim and John now. But there used to be some bangers. Reports hearing similar footsteps on the mountain. A story he would go on to share in a 1964 book titled More Highland Folktale. Alexander Taiwan. Was hunting for game with a revolver on the slopes of Ben Macdui in October of 1943. As he neared the Larig Grew Pass, he was suddenly enveloped by a quick, onsetting fog. Even through the mist, he could make out the sky was turning dark, and soon it would be storming. He immediately decided to leave and started heading down the Corey Etchichin track. Yet, even as he made his hurried hike down, he could hear the thud of large footsteps behind him, with a worrying amount of time before each step. Quote,
worrying. So it has long legs.
It's big.
Okay.
It's big. Big boy.
Big boy.
Quote, in October 1943, I spent a 10-day leave climbing alone in the Cadogan Gorge. One afternoon, just as I reached the semicon of Ben MacDewey, mist swirled across the Luragu end of the mountain. The atmosphere became dark and oppressive. A fierce, bitter wind whisked among the boulders, and an odd sound echoed through the mist. A loud footstep, it seemed. Then another, and another. A strange shape loomed up, receded, and came charging at me. Without hesitation, I whipped out the revolver and fired 3 times at the figure. When it so came on, I turned and hared down the path, reaching Glendary in a time that I would never have let. You may ask, was it really the fear of Laughmore? Frankly, I think it was. End quote.
Okay.
For those at home, I don't know if I'm going to leave this in. A man just opened the door, poked his head out, mouthed something, then disappeared. Was that the gray man?
It may have been.
I think it was. I also love that this man just admitted to, he saw a human-like shape in the mist, and instead of crying out, he just quick shot it free at it.
Right, like, what if this was a person? He just shot it. Why is this also a common theme among cryptids? Is people are like, I shot at him! Like, that's what we get.
I mean, I'm also confused why he's hunting a revolver. I think I read that he was, like, hunting because of, like, rations at the time, because of the war.
Okay. But so he probably didn't really care about what he was hunting with. He cared about what he was killing.
Maybe that's why he shot a person. He's about to go Donner's Pass on a motherfucker.
He's like, fuck yes, it's so much meat.
Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys.
God, look, it's a 10-foot tall man. That'll feed my family all winter.
Another sighting comes from 1945 with Peter Densham, leader of the Carn Gorm's RAF rescue team. So clearly this is an experienced, well-trained individual. He was doing some rescue work on Ben MacDewey, and he heard strange sounds surrounding him. All around him, the fog was closing in. The way it sought to envelop him seemed almost unnatural. His mounting tension turned to full-blown panic as he felt pressure on his neck. He's giving a massage. He could hear a careless whisper in the background. Freaked out, he quickly left the mountain. He would later say, quote, tell me that the wine was but the result of relaxed eardrums, and the presence was only the creation of a mind that was accustomed to take too great an interest in such things. I shall not be convinced. Come, rather, with me at the mysterious dusk time when day and night struggle upon the mountains. Feel the night wind on your faces, and hear it crying amid the rocks. See the desert uplands consumed before the racing storms. Though your nerves be of steel and your mind says it cannot be, you'll be acquainted with that fear without name, the intense dread of the unknown that has pursued mankind from the very dawn of time. End quote. It's really nice that all the witnesses here are fucking poets or something. Like,
right?
We usually don't get this caliber of writing on the cryptic code. It's usually like, I done saw an ape man.
I tried this one chili, it set my mouth on fire. I had to drink a 2-liter Mountain Dew.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Future Harmon has to edit that out.
I might not. It's a YouTube reference. Sadly, I can't find any more modern reports. Yet, even now, he might still linger. The world changes and evolves. The foggy highlands stubbornly hold on to their ancient secrets. And there, when the wind is howling, and the mist seems to swallow everything in its gray embrace, you would be forgiven for feeling a hint of something mystical. For feeling that maybe, just maybe, there really was something to those old stories. For feeling the burning sight of inhuman eyes peering through the haze as something old and ancient and angry watches from the peak of Ben MacDewey. So as the fog fades and our story ends, we are left, as always, with a simple question. What was the Gray Man? To present the skeptical side may attribute the sightings to a phenomenon known as Brocken Specter, an optical illusion caused by one's shadow being reflected onto the mist, causing it to look much larger. Are you familiar with this?
A little bit.
Yeah, like if the light's coming from behind you and you'll see your own shadow on the mist.
It's going to look a lot taller than you are.
Yeah, maybe even like a 20-foot ape man with finger toes.
Right.
Yeah. On top of that, the sense of dread supposedly emitted by the beast may be explained as infrasound. Are you familiar with the concept of infrasound? Okay, so it's this weird thing where certain frequencies can't be consciously recognized by the human body.
Okay.
But they affect your subconscious. And in some cases, if at the right frequency, will cause intense feelings of dread. In some cases, full-blown hallucinations.
Like a dog whistle.
Yeah.
But for people.
Yeah, there's actually this one, I remember reading about an apartment complex. For the longest time, everyone thought it was haunted because they'll get in the elevator and see weird shit. I think like one guy said he saw like a tiny spaceship in the corner. It would fly around and shit. And it turned out, it's the light bulb. Light bulb was broken. It was making that weird buzz sound. Mm-hmm. But it was infrasound. So it was literally just causing people to hallucinate while they're in the elevator.
Interesting.
Most of these sightings, remember, happened in Lurid Grew, a pass that could have a concentrated flow of wind, which in turn causes the infrasound. And, as we know, infrasound can cause panic and anxiety. So I guess those two things could interlink, and maybe that's how they're seeing the gray man to begin with. However, this does not fully explain the encounter's importance. The anonymous man in 1940 spotted the creature at night, so Brocken Specter would not apply. The guy who saw it out of his tent.
Right.
So, let's be honest. Science, skepticism, they're all important. They're all, you know, the other half of this show trying to explain the unusual. But let's get to the fun shit. Let's move on to the wilder explanation. One of the theories is that the gray man is a Sasquatch living on a remote mountain. This is the second time we've had, like, one of the theories was it's Bigfoot, but people don't think it's Bigfoot.
Right.
Its description certainly matches, but there is a problem that no physical evidence has ever been witnessed. Even when footprints should be left behind, the creature seems to appear and disappear without leaving a trace. No tracks have ever been found, despite one of his claims, the fame being stomping around. Almost everyone mentions that they hear the footsteps. Is it possible that the gray man is something a bit more incorporeal? One of the more out there theories is that the gray man is still a Sasquatch, just a dead one. I guess that makes sense. If Bigfoots are as intelligent as we believe, there's a chance they could leave spirits behind after death. Others posit that the gray man is a human ghost, perhaps a specter of a vengeful wild man, yet how does one explain it having distinctly inhuman features? But you look like you want to say something.
Bigfoot ghost?
Bigfoot ghost.
Bigfoot ghost.
What happens when Bigfoots die?
I mean, I don't know. I think the reason why a lot of people don't seem to think that animals can, like, haunt things, though, it kind of goes back into the weird, like, Bible thing where God was like, no, animals don't have souls, so animals can't go to heaven. So I guess, you know, if we think they don't have souls, then we wouldn't think that they could haunt something either. But if they do, then Bigfoot ghost kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, ghost dogs are a well-documented thing.
Right.
Ghost horses. I mean, like, what's the cutoff point? Like, why is it some animals get to have ghosts and others don't?
Yeah, like, why don't we have ghost pigs?
I was gonna say, like, ghost sharks.
Ghost hamsters.
Maybe. Don't hate me, pet lovers, but I don't care for hamsters. But do you think it also could be a person? Maybe that'll explain why they're like almost talking?
Maybe. Maybe it was a wild man, like a stray person, a feral person. A stray person. Jesus. Like a feral person. You know, like we talked about the national parks, feral people. Maybe it was a feral person. He's sort of learned to speak a little bit, but not a whole lot. So, or he learned to speak when he was a kid, and he kind of lost a lot of that language as he, you know, got deeper into being a feral human. And now he's just the gray man.
on the flip side, if it is a Sasquatch, do you think it's possible they can, like, mimic sound? I remember there are a few cases where people claim Sasquatches can, like, mimic people.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. They're not parrots.
Beautiful one cracker. But if you don't mind, I defer my own theory. The Gray Man is a Salif, better known as an air elemental. First discussed in the occult text Liber de Nymphs, written by Paracelsus in 1566, Salifs were just one of the four elementals he discussed. Buckle in, kid. We're going down some weird fucking rabbit hole.
I would have buckled in if you didn't forget me.
Elements out, future honey. The four types were gnomes, who represented the earth, salamanders, who represented fire, mermaids, or undine, in case we have any Undertale fans, that's where the name came from, who represent water, and sylphs, who embodied air. According to Paracelsus, these air elementals, are bigger than humans and a lot stronger. Additionally, they are said to be able to form themselves out of light and air, which would include mist, and even control the weather. Notice how mist seemed to just kind of appear just before the Gray Man arrived, quickly descending on victims. In some cases, they know that it would, like, almost intentionally envelop them. As soon as it's gone, it disappears. Or the presence of storms in some of the encounters. Is it possible that some occultist, way back when, summoned an air element? Supposedly, these creatures can be created as a product of alchemy. Which is basically like chemistry before they understood chemistry.
Right.
For those who don't know, it's like the idea of using chemicals to make magical shit, like the Sorcerer's Stone is a big one. Alchemist's Fire was a thing. It was basically napalm before napalm. And so it's these guys who want to use natural science for, like, occult stuff. An air elemental could explain the inhuman appearance, the ethereal ability to not leave a trace, and the seeming connection to the fog. Altogether, I think we have a strong case for the Gray Man being a Salif. Hell, even the name Salif translates in Latin to Salivertus, meaning wild man. But all that aside, we reach the crescendo of our episode. The final question we try to answer each and every episode of the Cryptic Code. Do you believe in the Gray Man of Ben MacDewey? Discuss.
I don't think I do.
Oh, you don't? Why not?
I don't know. I just, if it is real, I would argue that it is either the Salif or it is like a ghost.
Bigfoot? Fuck, that is my second favorite explanation.
No. I really want to believe that he's real because I want to believe that this creature is the last airbender. Like, that's what I want out of this, is to be able to believe that he's the last airbender.
And just when the world needed him most, he disappeared.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're saying.
I don't remember.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then what do you think people are seeing?
I don't know. I mean, I think a good explanation is definitely, you know, just the shadow thing. When the sun's behind you, you reflect a certain way. If your hands are, like, at your sides, they may blend into your legs, and then they're going to point out and look like big, long fucking finger toes at the bottom. Like, that's just how stuff like that works. I feel like that's probably the most likely explanation. But then you have the guy in the tent. But maybe the guy in the tent had heard some other stories, and the guy in the tent's like, I want to see it too.
But let me do a counter-argument. A lot of these guys are experienced climbers who have been up this mountain a ton of times, or at least up a bunch of mountains, like Norman Colley. Like, dude discovered every mountain in Canada, pretty much. I feel like he would have encountered this before, but even years later, it still stuck out to him as, like, something unnatural.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, if this is just like random people, I would be down with you. But we have the leader of the RAF rescue squad.
Right.
These are people who like, they know mountains. These are mountain motherfuckers. Like,
okay, fair. My final stance is he is real. He is the last airbender.
Did I convince you?
I think so.
Fuck yeah. We got a double yes, everyone. Ah, that's another one for the books. Well, did you enjoy the story? Any thoughts you want to share before we close out the episode? I know it's a bit shorter than usual, but honestly, it was a pain in the bum finding what I did.
Really?
Yeah. Not a lot written about this guy. I really had to do some digging.
Interesting. It's like the cryptid of cryptids.
If I were going to suggest he like was covering it up, he was like murdering people who wrote about him too much. Maybe. Oh my god, do you think he was the one who looked in on us? Oh god. We're going to get attacked on our way to the car.
Oopsies.
I hope you all enjoyed listening to this episode. We're finally getting back into the groove of things, so I'm happy about that. And if you are a fan of the show, please subscribe on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts. Leave reviews if you don't mind. It really helps us out. And you can always follow us at The Cryptid Code on Twitter. But until next time, stay safe. Stay away from Scotland Mountains. And most of all, stay spooky out there.